All right. Hi, this is Brian Smiga, and I'm with Alpha Venture Partners Podcast. We're looking at a category-leading company here with John Frankel of FF Ventures.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning, John. Thanks for joining us. So John, please tell the audience about FF. How do you define yourself? And start with what FF stands for.
So FF is a seed stage firm based in New York. We're in our 10th year of operation, which is kind of amazing. It only feels like yesterday when we started. We've got about 70 active portfolio companies, and we're a seed stage firm. So we start when a company is just getting going. We're usually the first institutional money. And to use another hackneyed phrase, FF stands for founder friendly. But what it really means is we're an engaged investor. We don't just cut a check and sit back, which means we will often lead rounds. We will sit on boards. We will help companies, not just with strategy and connections, everything else you expect from a VC firm. But we also have people internally who can help with accounting, community, and other matters to really help de-risk a company. And we only really like to get involved where we feel we can make a material difference to help the company. Of the 70 active companies we have, around about 17 of them are worth 50 million or more, which to us is the measure of sort of like the breakout stage for a company. So we think we've got a good sort of stable of leading companies. Where we look at location, we're about 40% New York, about 25% West Coast, the rest is in between. And when we look at industries and areas of focus, we're about three quarters enterprise, about a quarter consumer, with strong exposure in fintech, cybersecurity, AI, and increasing interest in drones and robotics.
Great. And I can attest, because John and I just did a portfolio review, that he's got a great crop of companies, 10 of them. That are really attractive and are going to raise rounds greater than 50 million in valuation. So congratulations, John, on building this and your previous portfolios. Today we're going to focus on a company you helped build and harvest called Plated.
Yeah, I mean, I guess given it's in the food space, build and harvest, maybe grow and harvest. Plated is a company that was out of consensus when we invested in it. It was out of consensus. We continued to put capital into the company. And I think when they sold, it was kind of out of consensus. And so I think it indicates our willingness to sort of, you know, independently think about a space and an opportunity. Yep. So what can I tell you about Plated? You tell me.
Well, so let's tell the story. So the hero or the founders, right? And
absolutely.
And then you, John, and your team, when you met them, what was it about them and their out of the box approach to meal kit delivery that made you move in and write a check?
So we have seen a lot of something in a box on a subscription basis. Companies, and we've passed on every one. And when Nick and Josh came in and explained what they wanted to do, there was one dynamic, one aspect of their model that really intrigued us: the notion of mass customization. And what I mean by that is they said, we don't want to deliver a set of recipes, a set of ingredients to people to cook their meals each week, where we don't know what the people like or don't like. We believe that through data mining, through analyzing past orders, we can put in front of people the meals that will appeal to them. And we looked at that model and we said, you know, the key thing on subscription models is retention. If you give people more of what they want, they'll retain higher, you'll get a better business model. You can acquire customers cheaper than everyone else, and over time, you'll build the winning model. And so that is what intrigues us. And if you look at a company, such as Blue Apron, their model was 80-90% of people get the meat box, 5% or whatever get the vegetarian box, etc. They would ship out a small single digit number of different boxes each week. And Plato's model was to ship out thousands of permutations every week. And it really was something they built up on from the beginning. They didn't pivot from that idea. They just expanded choice over time. So 2 years ago, you could subscribe to Plated and they would have five different meals to choose from. And today, when you go, there's 20 different meals you can choose from each week, plus three different desserts. And the increased choice has led to superior retention, has led to lower cost of acquisition, and allowed the company to grow and much more capital efficiently than say Blue Apron. But it was out of consensus. You know, a lot of people, a lot of tech investors looked at this and said it's a winner take all market. And you needed to find the investors who understood tech, understood that this was a logistics company, and also understood brand. Most tech investors really find it difficult to understand why Heinz can continue to command the premium for ketchup. You know, they would feel it should be commoditizable. And so the meal kit space is this intersection of brand and technology. And that's what intrigued us.
So this is a chance to examine a little bit how FF with your star team adds value when a company's really early and then adds value later when decisions need to be made. So how are some of the ways the FF team gathered around Nick and Josh and supplied them with other smart brains and hands to get things done in the early days?
Well, the first thing we do is we put two partners on every deal. So it was myself and Ryan Armbrust. And that gives you two independent perspectives and two people who connect into the firm. We then had probably another four or five people within the firm who were engaged with multiple people on their side, you know, from community and PR through to accounting and financial planning and analysis. And that really gave us a lot of understanding of the company. It helped us have conviction when we need to step up and cut checks at times when, you know, others were skeptical, and really gave us insights about the company that allowed us to talk with, you know, other VCs we know to explain the story and get over the sort of knee-jerk reaction that a lot of people have in tech about, emerging positions and markets.
So then there's the staying the course part, or the important shifts you make to reach that goal. In this case, it was mass customization and logistics to deliver very bespoke food kits. There had to be some surprises along the way. And were there any changes that you and Ryan helped the team make along the way to realize that goal?
Well, I think there are a lot of sort of micro decisions along the way. You know, we had monthly board meetings all the way through. There were fascinating conversations. You know, we had a team who was driven to provide the highest quality food. So, for instance, if you look at organic chicken, you know, there's, you know, six different grades of organic chicken from just if you look at the antibiotic use, that this chicken has never in its life ever had antibiotics, which is called never, which is the highest grade, to they get antibiotics at birth but never again, to they get antibiotics up to a month before the chicken is killed, to there's all different degrees of this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we talked about how you communicate it. You know, Plated never claimed that things were organic because maybe 90% of what was in the box was organic, but one item that was added was not. And so they never overreached on claims. We ensured that we had the highest standards. There were no standards in this space with regard to food preparation. There are for restaurants, there are for factories, but not for meal prep companies. And the company spent an enormous amount of time and energy working around that, you know, to ensure there was never, you know, spoiled food that would, you know, cause a major problem for the company. So, you know, there were a lot of those kinds of things happening. There were lots of crazy situations that happen when you're actually running a company that sort of surface. I would say that the biggest thing that we did to help, and you should really talk to Nick and Josh and ask them, but what we tried to do was, because we've seen companies go through different stages, was guide them at which stages they really needed to you know, build up certain business processes, such as when they should have, you know, inside accounting. We helped them a lot with recruiting, helping sort of form their metrics and the like.
And you helped with funding as well, right?
Well, yes. I mean, there was, yes, we helped them with funding.
And this was a company that was out of consensus, needed capital to grow into its opportunity space. And I think FF played a big role in assisting with subsequent rounds. Isn't that true?
No, that is absolutely true. You know, I don't really like to sort of talk about this kind of stuff, but we try to be there when things are at their darkest. 8 months into our investment, when we had $850,000 into the company, we get a call that, for various reasons which were beyond their control, they were going to run out of funding in 3 weeks, and they weren't going to be able to make payroll.
Right.
And you know, we sat down as a team, and because we had a half dozen people who really understood them, and because we knew their cost acquisition and lifetime value, and we had you know, multiple points of contact, we as a group came to conclusion we really wanted to bag them. So we sent them a check the next day, actually a wire, and we told them there was more money behind that, but let's now work to put together a round, which we led. And then we continued to back them into the Series A, where we were largest check into the Series A, even though we didn't lead the round. And you know, it was a company. You know, there were just a number of times where we really felt we had a good understanding of the company and what they needed, and we would help them articulate the story to other investors. And we ended up having a phenomenal team around the table, you know, including Graycroft, Formation 8, Kai. You know, we had some really, really great investors that stood there and backed the company, you know, all the way through.
Yeah, and there's no doubt, John, that you and Ryan and your team are noted for your rolling up your sleeves and doing whatever it takes, and living up to being founder friendly. And so, many of these companies we met when they were smaller, you guys have added tremendous value.
Well, look, I'm blushing a little bit here, but look, understand, in the world of VC, you expect a third of companies to fail, a third to, you know, be boring and not sort of deliver the returns you want, and the last third deliver the returns, and a third or 10% of the portfolio is really what defines the portfolio. And most firms, because they run with fewer people, they get overpowered and they move from being active investors with their first fund to being passive investors later on, because they've just got too much going on. We like to remain active investors. And what that means is, when you have a company that looks like it's failing, we put a lot of energy into, should we step up or step back? Mm-hmm. It would be very easy if a company calls you up out of the blue and, you know, just a list on the name or a name on a list, and they say, look, we can't make payroll in 3 weeks. it's very easy to say, okay, that's in our loss column. You know, for our fund size, we can take an 850,000 loss. We love you guys dearly, but nothing we can do. You know, we've got the resources to be able to dig in. And some occasions, we kind of like say, look, guys, there's nothing we can do because we don't think the space is the opportunities. We don't think the team has delivered what we think they can do, or we don't like the business model. It hasn't evolved the way we think. I mean, we, like any other venture capital firm, if it's not working, we step back. We can't fall in love with companies because we can't, you know, we can't be like King Canute trying to push the tide back. But there are situations like Plated where we had a company which we really believed in the team, we believed in the model, and we really felt that the space had a ton of opportunity. We continue to believe meal kits is a massive space. And we think that Plated under Albertsons ended up buying them. Plated under Albertsons is probably going to be one of the big dominant players in the space for a number of reasons. But, you know, we decided to step up and back them because we had the bandwidth to understand the problem.
Right. And it paid off, and it paid off over a relatively short period of time.
Well, it returned half the fund.
Yeah. So congratulations on this great exit. And standing by these founders who I've met and are great guys that would achieve this mission and did, and it's great to know how you and your team played the role. Now since Plated sold to Albertsons, where it's going to become a national brand and grow even further into the bespoke meal delivery business. A couple things have happened. Do you have any reflection on either the Blue Apron IPO or on Amazon's decision to enter the food business?
Well, you know, I look at the food business in this way. It's $1.5 trillion business in the U.S. Dinner is $450 billion. You know, meal kits last year were 2 to 3 billion, and I think they can grow to being 20 to 30 billion. So I think there's a lot of upside. The space depends on retention, and I think Blue Apron's decision to not innovate as they were growing rapidly cost them, because they didn't watch what the competition was doing. Plated and others were innovating around choice. And that really meant that though category retention held up, it didn't hold up for Blue Apron. They're now in a bit of a box. They raised less money than they wanted to. They're saddled with a couple hundred million of debt. They've got a stock price trading below $5, where a lot of institutions don't like to play. So they've got a number of issues they need to resolve. They're trying to innovate, but innovation takes time, and the market will see if it gives them time to innovate. The space itself, I think, is fascinating. I think that you're going to continue to see, you know, significant innovation around this. You know, so if I look at my 5-year view, I put on my sort of 5-year hat here. I believe that personalized medicine is something that's going to come, that you're going to run DNA, biome, et cetera, tests, and you're going to say, these things are good for me and these things are not. And I think it goes from medicine all the way through to food. And you can run blood tests today to see where you have antibodies to which types of foods and could be emerging allergies for you or things that irritate you at us, you know, subconscious level or level that you're not conscious about. But let's say you have that and you learn that you can have Brazil nuts but you can't have pistachio. It's very difficult to deal with that. It's very difficult to go to the restaurant and order around your peculiarities. It's very difficult to go to a supermarket and order stuff. But if you have, you know, take Plated, which today has, you know, 20 different options. Let's say they have 100. Let's say they have 200 5 years from now. And let's say you have a feedback that says, these are the things that I should eat that are good for me. These are things I should minimize or avoid. Wouldn't it be great if it was a meal kit service that delivered to you the 5 or 10 meals that week that really were right for you? Or the intersection between yourself and, you know, your significant other. I think that's where the world's going. And I think that the sort of data systems that Plated and others will build up will enable that.
Well, I think we're going to leave it there, John. I think it's a great ending note that mass personalization is going to be a theme for tech in the years to come. Maintaining a five-year outlook, as you are doing, is critical to investing. And also that you guys really live up to your name, which not everybody knows stands for founder-friendly.